This podcast is supported by Siemens, your partner for industrial-grade AI.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of our Industrial AI podcast. My name is Robert Weber, and it's a pleasure to talk to
Peter Seeberg. Good morning, Robert. Good morning, afternoon, evening, dear listener, wherever you are.
Peter, when you, dear listeners, listen to this episode, Peter and I will already be in Linz and looking forward to our guest. And we will be talking about XLSDM, blue collar AI, and industrial AI use cases for 2 days now. And what are you looking forward to the most, Peter?
To Linz.
Yeah. Which topic?
Linz of all places. I think you've been saying, or the world, well, not the world, but many people are saying Linz is the place to be in Europe. Let's say one of the places to be as far as artificial intelligence is concerned, right?
Yeah, but which topic? XLSDM, blue collar, or industrial AI use cases by Marco Huber?
The use cases we do all the time, and that does not mean that they're not important. They are very. I'm going to start off myself just with an agent's use case. So that's always very, very interesting for you and I more to be part, not actively. We organize, we moderate, we sit in the meetings and we listen. So we learn about use cases. Of course, I'm going to be asking my questions, and I'm very much looking forward to the attendees asking their questions on XLSDM, you know, where we're standing, what is the site. Again, I'm going to finish today, I think, with small language models. So that's going to be one of the topics, right? I think these days language models do not have to be big. So XLSDM, most certainly. And then looking forward to meeting Jan again, Jan Kautnik. I think I told you, it must have been at the very beginning. I think it's really, we're talking 5 years ago.
5 years back, yeah.
It was a Saturday morning. Now, the specific thing I think about now, and Jan was here visiting Munich BMW office 5 years ago, and he was invited. He was welcomed like a pop star. It was so special.
We will also welcome him like a pop star in Linz.
Well, there you go. You know, let's see. And it was, I think it was really 8 a.m., you know, people, at least this part of the world, and that's one of our problems, I think, but there you go. People typically sleep, right, you know, Saturday morning. And there must have been, I don't know, 200 people, and the room was completely filled. And Jan was talking about, I assume, probably at that time, reinforcement learning. So I haven't seen him since you have. So I'm very much looking forward to actually meet Jan again and to learn from what he has been doing the last 5 years. You know, from, I believe that time his number one topic was reinforcement learning. Now towards our main theme, you know, shop floor activities.
I'm really looking forward to the next 2 days, Peter. But before we talk with our guests and we discuss the topics, what do you have in the news section?
Yeah, two, three things. So one, as I already suggested, there was this AI agents. That's my big topic for the next year, I guess, until there's another one. I don't know. There was a demo that was by Konrad Puska. He's from Elunic. I think there's a Munich-based service provider, AI in mechanical engineering. And so they were showing an AI service agent processing a spare parts order. They integrate Jira, I think it's called, a ticket system, make.com. That was in itself very interesting. I looked at that one. They call themselves more than a no-code workflow automation. I should talk about it, a little bit about it later on. And they integrate it with their own shop floor, GPT, they call it, industrial AI or AIoT, sorry, platform, which amongst other things I saw does things like anomaly detection analysis, right? So it starts with a customer request by email. You know, I urgently need a spare part. Probably happens 100 times a day with, you know, machine builders, right? And then the system in this combined solution finds the customer, you know, that's, I guess, important. So finds what product has this customer bought from us and therefore understands what exactly, very specifically, the customer needs, right? Now, and the system also produces the answer. I guess that is the GPT thing, right? And then that is important. There is a human. And I believe in English, we do call them service agent, right? This word agent, we have never had that, not in the German language, but I think it's a general in English, right? So the human person, the agent, then sends the email. So bottom line, there's a ticket request reply. It's going to be sent out within, let's say, 1 minute, which what normally would maybe take 15 minutes or maybe half an hour, right? So what we hear, what we see is that this is a, you know, semi-automatic, I would say, human in the loop. I've seen the human in the loop, you know, lately as a thing that is, you know, important, necessary. Not sure what element of the demo is the agent thing. Did they build the agent? Is it the make.com? Because the make.com, if you go there, it's really what I believe and have been talking about, this no-code workflow automation, right? I've always been talking about, you know, in the future, domain experts, they move things around. And that's, I believe, what this make.com offers any of us listeners who are not coders. You know, it's a no code. So you take pieces on the screen and you move them left to right with arrows and stuff like that. So anyway, I checked with Konrad if he wants to do an interview beginning of the year. And, you know, also looking forward, of course, this is a little bit, you know, offside of what we typically do, but it's closely related, of course, to industrial. And I want to see if maybe by that time they will have a production line use case as well.
Great, great use case. Thanks a lot. I want to talk a little bit about robots, because you have recently become a big fan of robots. Am I right?
Not really recently, but not so specifically, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, but you share a lot of robot stories in the moment.
There I see you that go,
on
yeah.
LinkedIn, yeah. Let's talk very briefly about Musk's robots, which Rogue played and danced with the visitors when he presented his caps. What did you think? His humanoids.
What did I think? Number one thing I recall is that this person saying, I didn't look from beginning to end because I am not a big fan of typically, but I don't want to go to the details of the person. But I heard that, and I did, of course, you know, I get some glimpses that things were really controlled from the side. So it's like, it's like, I need to be careful, I guess, because I don't want to get a legal claim, right? So, but I'm not sure that everything was, you know, real robots. There was this other big discussion. I think we always have to divide between robots in an industrial environment. That's where we in Europe, specifically also in Germany, have been very big, as well as Japan, United States, of course, China, and on the other hand, you know, robots in a consumer space, right? So this was typically robots in the consumer space, humanoids. I have never been a real fan of that. Now, it was interesting to see, again, so if that was all real, if they were real humanoids or not, that's one. And within the production environment, I have been told by many people, and that's why I believe we have seen this specific robot also in a production environment, because people say, you know, if we don't have humans, we can't find the humans, then the robots can more easily take their place. Okay, I understand that as a transitional technology. I think long-term is going to be a lot more productive, effective to just build new factories. Factories that have technology included, integrated, that do not come from the perspective of a humanoid. I think that is the wrong approach, personally. I think you just look at automation. You know, if it's the old plus the new, whatever it is, whatever is good or whatever is most effective. So if we need a piece of automation that is walking like a human, let's use it. If we instead are going to take, you know, instead of, you know, legs, we're going to take wheels, because that is better, then we should go for the wheels and we shouldn't come from the perspective of the humanoid.
I talked to some guys at the Fraunhofer IPER, And the Fraunhofer IPA is testing the humanoid Unitree from China in the next few weeks. And I reserved a slot for us to do then an interview with the guys when they're ready, when they tested the Unitree. And they're really looking forward to receive the first humanoid in the IPA lab. And I'm really looking forward to the results they will publish then. Yeah.
Well, so what is your perspective on humanoids in general? I mean, you see them come join us, around us in Europe, in China, in the United States, privately in the factories. What is your view?
I was surprised because the people at the event there, at Musk's event, they were very open to talk to the robots, to joke with the robots, to play with the robots. I was a bit surprised about that because normally the people are more skeptical when a robot like this stands in front of you. I think we will see robots like this. I'm not sure, as you mentioned, if it's a robot on wheels or not. I don't know. But what I found, and that's very interesting, because there was a LinkedIn post by Agility Robotics, and they also produce human, I would not say it's humanoid, they do not really look as humanoids, but they have a very nice quote, and I will do now the quote. "There's been a lot of talk today about teleoperation and humanoid robots. In general, teleoperation is great. It can help support data collection, robot skill development, testing hardware limits, and plenty of other useful things. We look at is as it one tool in the toolbox of many, what we use when it makes sense. Teleoperation goes wrong when companies try to pass it off as something else. To adopt humanoid robots in our lives and throughout society, we must build trust and confidence in the robots and the companies who bring them to the market. There's no need for parlor tricks." And this is very interesting, parlor tricks.
Oh, right. Okay. Not sure we're going to need to talk about that more.
Yeah.
Again, just being careful that we don't say wrong things.
But this was a quote by Agility Robotics.
Yeah. Right. And so I've understood exactly what they said, and I assume our listeners do as well, but we can go into the details. But
I must say, the booster of his spaceship landed impressively. That was great to see. Did you see that?
I saw that, and if that is really true, it was impressive. Now, what is so bad, what I used it for was exactly to say, I don't believe it.
Oh, Peter.
No. And this is now not about Peter. Well, it's about Peter's brain, as always. And of course, I'm responsible. Whoever I am talking now, my brain about my brain. No, it's just because just the day before, as you know, doing my baritone playing, I listened to the music, and suddenly, for whatever reason, there was this picture in my YouTube of, I think it was an Airbus A380, and it was landing on a carrier, you know, on a huge ship carrier, right? And I thought, oh, what is that? And for whatever, it got me in, and I looked at it, and it took off from the carrier. And then people said, well, of course, that was fake. But I was in the middle of it. It was so impressive. I believe there is a point where when the airplane takes off with its wide wings, it's impossible because it's going through the tower of the carrier, right? And I think maybe I was seeing it, but I wasn't certain. Now, and then after I saw it, somebody said, this is fake. Somebody produced it. And for that reason, it was when I then a day later saw this thing coming down to Earth, I didn't believe it.
You need to be invited next time.
Right. And I was very happy still. I wasn't like, oh, Peter, don't make problems or whatever. But it was more like sharing that this feeling, and this was just an example feeling, and all of us already had, are going to have these kind of feelings more and more all the time. So yes, if that's what he did there, very impressive, I guess.
Exactly. What else do you have, Peter?
Coming down to Earth, there is this paper I want to share and then maybe do a podcast on it also beginning of next year because we're rather full already for this year. It's about methods, tools for the engineering assurance of safe autonomous systems. There you go again. And Elena Trubetskaya Bitsuna, I hope I pronounce that correctly. She's from the Royal Institute of Technology, Stockholm. She is the lead author. Mario Trapp is there as well, one of the four. Did you say that you're going to meet him, maybe?
I will meet him in December at the SICK Beyond Safety Forum.
So you can discuss this with him as well. So Mario was with us two, three years ago already on, of course, exactly the same topic. He is with Technical University of Munich. Autonomous systems rely increasingly on artificial intelligence, machine learning for implementing safety critical functions. And that is what this is about. I didn't go into the details, but I am convinced that this topic of safety for a production environment, machines, including embedding AI, machine learning, Gen AI, whatever it is, moving towards autonomous agents, all the things that we talk about, in the end, we will need to make sure that they are safe, right? And that's what they talked about. It was a very specific reason, but that's not that important. I asked Elena, same thing, do you want to be in a podcast? And then I hope she says yes, and we can do a podcast at the beginning of the year.
Perfect. I still have to share a video tip, but first a transparency note. As you know, I support the NX AI guys in Linz with comms and community, but Johannes Brandstedt and his team have launched something very cool. It's called Universal Physics Transformers, UPT. It's a framework for scaling neural operators, and they recorded in a video, a YouTube video, and they explain there the paper and the technology and how they want to accelerate simulations in the next step. So it's very interesting. No advertising, only information.
There was a YouTube video as well there. I think I managed half through it. But it's really for techies, right?
Yeah, it's for techies, yeah.
Who was it done by?
By Benedikt Alkin, yeah.
By Benedikt, right, yeah.
He's the PhD.
I do believe I did follow most of it. For whatever reason, I was then interrupted. I didn't see the second part of it. But so maybe, I guess we're going to share that as well. Just as a point of reference, it's for the real techies amongst you, and I'm sure you are going to be making stuff available also for the likes of myself for the
exactly. We will do the recording next time we will publish something. We will do a management summary in the beginning, and then we will have the deep tech part with the PhDs or with the researchers.
Okay.
But I think it's a good idea to have a management summary at the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, we typically do not go that level of detail, although there may be many of you who need, who work at that detail, and you are interested on more the strategic stuff that Robert and I talk about. Now, mentioning the name of Johannes here, so another topic is, of course, we quickly need to talk about it, although you already did at the beginning of our last podcast, is the Nobel Prize. Because, so, Nobel Prize, Jeff Hinton, John Hopfield for physics, Demis Hassabis, one of my heroes. We talked about him here. He wasn't with us here yet, but who knows? That's even more difficult. Chess AlphaFold, together with his colleague, I believe, John Jumper, both from Google DeepMind, and David Baker, is he a professor in chemistry. So you already did a comment. Thank you very much. Beginning of last podcast by Günter Klumbauer. Very to the point, you know, with Günther being the professor and also part of NX AI, but in the, is it the biology, chemistry, atmosphere? So a very good comment to start off that maybe we share two, three comments. I shared a video by Andrew Wang on Jeff Hinton. That must have been, you know, maybe 5 to 10 years ago. Very interesting. And that's why I said it. I made the link. I shared the Hopfield networks is all you need.
Yes.
And that's by many, I assume, PhD students, and including then again, Günter Klumbauer and Johannes, as you just mentioned, Johannes Brandstetter and Sepp Hochreiter. And of course, we had a couple of, I only saw one comment by Jürgen Schmidhuber. Maybe you saw other ones because I do not follow X. So here we are. So I called this topic the AI Nobel Prize. And as most of us know, there is no AI, does not exist as a category for the Nobel Prizes. But here we are. So what is your view after a couple of days here?
I wanted to ask you the same question as I ask Günther. Are we at peak AI?
Yeah, sure.
I think we won't see it again because AI will become a tool for scientists, for researchers in the future. And yeah, that's the peak now.
Yeah, the question is if it's a local peak or a global peak. I'm referring to neural network machine learning, I think it's called gradient descent. Now, this is an example of where I go one step further down without really knowing. But what the importance is that what in many of these, I believe also actually in the LSTM, XLSTM, is looking for the minimum. And is that a local minimum or a global minimum? And the point is, if you're standing in the Alps, you know, and you look over a couple of peaks and you see, oh, there's this valley, you know. And for you at that point, that is the lowest point or the highest point, exactly the same thing. Now, but if you look at a higher level, there is a higher mountain, let's say, on this planet, or there's a deeper valley. Now, the point I want to make with this one is that, yes, that we are at a peak here. Now, are we going to see other peaks? And you made the joke of, but I saw it copied. Maybe somebody listened to you. You said, you know, Sam Altman is going to get the Nobel Prize for Literature, right?
Yes. Yeah, this was a joke.
But somebody else was making the same suggestion.
Really? Okay.
Where are we with the, have only these two been announced or have others been announced as well, other categories?
Literature, medicine. Yeah, we are done. We are.
Oh, there have been. Yeah. Oh, there you go. See, so this is only confirming that I normally do not follow, because, and that is maybe my most important comment. Here are people who most certainly deserve a prize, and at the same time, always it will make clear that there's many people around these people that would have also deserved. Now, of course, when you're working in physics,
it's always the same.
Right? But that is the problem with these things. We have had it before. We had it with the Turing Prize. The Turing Prize was really off. You know, I shared this video on Jeff, and I'm sure he comes over as a great guy. He's done many, many important things. But, you know, getting a Turing Prize when you're on the payment list of Google, which is the only at the moment supporter of that prize, you know, that's a little bit of a problem. So, but that's all I'm going to say. And that is really the problem. That's really the problem, that, you know, pointing to one or two people, it means that you're not pointing to another 10. Maybe you shouldn't say 100, but at the level of these people, there's two or three or four or five other people who could have deserved, and that's always the problem.
What else do you have, Peter? Or can we move into the main part?
Two more things, yeah. Oh, I have one more topic on robots.
I said you are a big fan of robots. You said you're the bird.
I told you, I was working with robots 10 years ago. I was in the ABB factory in Sweden many, many times. I saw the robots being assembled and using very specific communication technology that I was at that time responsible for, OPC UA actually. So AI robots go to work. This is just a reference, quick one. It's about Foxconn. Foxconn, which has a different name in Chinese. It's about lights off factories. I shared it on LinkedIn. So they say they have over 70,000 machine tools, right? You know, they are the machines doing the metal cutting, grinding, polishing, all that good stuff, right? Now, in the past, as is the case everywhere, I guess, you know, these have strongly relied on skilled humans, right? They adjust the parameters, they operate the machinery, they listen. That's the typical thing, you know. And then we're typically, of course, always talking about the older people with the experience of 20, 30, 40 years. They listen to the sound of the equipment. They know what is the state of my material, what is the temperature in my factory. And these are all the things that if you start doing data science, machine learning, you can take all these values in and see if then your algorithm can find something. Now, of course, people always make mistakes, adjusting machinery takes a long time. So Foxconn has decided that they wanted to automate this operation. So moving, resulting in these lights out factories, except for the green yet yellow signals from sensors and machines, of course. So I think what is interesting, and I think I shared, I said it's a great job, and I asked the responsible person, Chenting Wu, if you're listening or your colleagues are listening, for the availability of a Pascas as well. Now, of course, I think they said they started where they are there with 400,000 people. Now there's only 250,000 people. So the one question is going to be, is that a problem? What are those 150,000 people doing on one side? And on the other hand, you know, whenever we talk here, we don't find the people. So moving this direction could be a chance for us in certain other parts of the world to continue producing. So I'm not going to say more than that. I would enjoy to be able to talk to Chenting and learn more about their lights out factories.
That's very interesting, because I remember the Industry 4.0 discussion in Germany. I don't know if you remember. At the time, the topic was an absolutely no-go. Do you remember this?
Well, 10 years ago, right? Yeah, 11, yeah.
There was a huge discussion and they never touched this topic.
As I say, it has all to do with the state of economics, right? You know, we don't have the people here. It's amazing. I mean, it's as it is. I'm not sure how we call it. We have a word for it here, but it's the boom generation over here, where many, many people had many, you know, and talking then again about China and Europe and other places, we had many, many people being born, which now, and it's just started over the next 10 years, you know, are going to just finish their work life, right? So, and we're going to be losing so many people who have been in production, in work, and we desperately need over here, I believe it's the same in the United States, we need alternative solutions for being able to continue to produce. And that was probably, I assume, not the same 11 years ago when the Industry 4.0 was invented as a new idea, right?
But that was already foreseeable 10 years ago, right? Or 15 years ago.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So, but I remember it was absolutely no go to talk about lights off factories. When you asked this question as a journalist, they said, no, that will never happen. Never.
Yeah. And of course, I did a presentation with Fabian Kreutmeier last week. And of course, you always have to be careful. You know, you want to interact with your audience and talk about autonomous. And then what I always do, I talk about, there is this chance for, you know, a solution to a problem that we have. And on the other hand, many people, maybe I assume also including in our audience, you, dear listeners, some of you, I believe most of you that have been working with AI for a longer time, I think the less scared you are, that's my very rough hypothesis. And people that are furthest away, that only hear and read about AI in the newspaper, they are very scared. So, and that's, on the other hand, you need to be very careful of people very afraid of their job. AI taking away that job. So I think we need to just see where it goes. There's going to be areas where it's going to be very good. There's going to be factories and there's going to be buildings. And inside of the buildings, things are going to be produced. And people are sitting in control room centers somewhere else in the world. And what is happening in
teleoperation.
That's going to be happening, I believe, yeah.
Last topic, Peter, language models on the edge.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to talk about Apple. I'm going to start with Peter Gostav. I think you know him. He provides the finest daily LLM, or should I say SLM, in this well-known, it's my word for small language model updates on LinkedIn. He shares the fact that Meta launched a 1 billion parameter model. You know, 1 billion is small, right? Relatively, you can probably comment on that being closer to the size of models these days. And then he looks at where it ranks on the LMSIS arena. Now, by the way, Peter and I have been, I believe, the biggest promoters of this chatbot arena. You'll find it at lmarena.ai from the very beginning, really from the very beginning, probably a year ago. I still look at it once a week. This morning, from the start, OpenAI way ahead above anybody else.
Do you hold shares there, or what is your background?
No, oh, no, 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 no. I saw actually one of the, not sure what company he's now with, As you know, many times after our podcast, I go and look in my huge followership and just make specific people on with a cert. So I think, no, I do not. I hold zero shares at the moment, so that makes it very easy. So you see, OpenAI is way above anyone else there with an ELO of 133A, just a number. And by the way, in the meantime, Hugging Face has over 1 million models, right? That's a complete different topic. And then they're followed by Google with 1,304. So that's like, you know, 30 points. That's a lot. And then there's Anthropic. And if you're going to compare it with chess, by the way, there's Magnus Carlsen with 2831 and Hikaru with 2802. That's also, I didn't know that the difference was so big. So very, very interesting. There is one king at the top, and the king in this case, and again, I hold no shares in, there is no shares yet in OpenAI Red. I don't hold them. And then the second one comes really very far down. Now, the point that Peter is making is that while this new Meta, 1 billion, is really down the list at rank 100, so I never look at that, I only look at the top 10, and he says it does rank above a lot of models that were pretty notable 6 to 12 months ago. No, right. So that's my point, right? And he. So
that's interesting because I think they're looking for new playing fields because they still don't know how to make money out of it. And now they're looking for new playing fields, smaller models, edge devices, drones, whatever. Yeah.
And that's the point really of what I was going to make here as well is, you know, and as he says, you know, a year ago, he mentions the Falcon 180B. So I guess that stands for 180 billion, right? And it came out and now it got beaten by a model 180s the side. Yeah. So, and he now absolutely tiny models can run on a phone. That's the point. And the point is in the end, sure, it's confirming to what I believe the near future, you know, we're all going to have our personal AI assistants, personal AI assistants. That was also a topic, you know, 2 weeks ago in our UX design XAI with Tom Cadera and Marco Huberne. Yeah, that's what I really believe, right? And for the moment, that is our smartphone. Some of us are using the, what is it, around your arm, wrist kind of...
Watch, Apple Watch.
Oh, we still call it watch. I don't use a watch. That's why I forgot the word, I guess. So whatever it's going to be, and this is confirming, and again, without going into the details of, just for you who are listening to the Industrial AI podcast, think of this idea. Let me know what you think of this idea that we are all going to have our own personal assistant. Now, is it some kind of BYOD, bring your own device again? And some of you are going to say, oh, please, no, it was such a huge problem with security and everything. I do believe that, you know, you are, and, you know, we talked, and then we're going to probably slowly fade out. We're going to have a Jan Kautnik at the very moment today when you're listening, or we already did, on the, what is it, the blue collar. So you are a blue collar person. You do have a smartphone. You came from your home this morning. You walk into the factory, and of course, it needs to be taken care of, security, et cetera, et cetera. But you walk in, and your personal assistant will continue to communicate with you. That is my view. And your personal assistant will interact with the systems on the shop floor, right? You know, assuming this is a shop floor where there's humans walking around. So that's, I'll leave it at that, yeah.
Do you know what the restrictions are for Llamas from how many users you can use it for free?
No, I normally do not know those details, no.
You can use it on an open source license or something like that. It's not truly open source, we know that. But there's a license, I don't know how many users, 100 million or something. But oh. Then when you think about smartphone, drones, watches, assistants, uh-huh. Then you need to pay at the end because then you have so many users around the world. So it's interesting to check also these, yeah, the licensing. Yeah,
sure. But in the end, that is fine. I mean, that's the for me still difficult topic of open source, which I do. Well, we've had it a couple of times, but it's perfectly okay. And it's very, very important. You know, there's aficionados, not sure where you're standing, you know, open source above everything else. I do understand that in certain cases where, you know, the knowledge of the world should not be in the hands of a number of companies. I'm completely with that. On the other hand, yeah, that's a great question, because even if you do open source, you need to live, you know, you need to be able to make money. And that's perfectly okay for big companies and for small companies. So that's a very good point. And why would I not be willing to pay for a personal assistant that's going to, you know, make my life a lot easier? I pay for my smartphone today, right? I pay for the piece of hardware. I pay for a service. If there's going to be an add-on of whatever that number is, people are going to find out what that is. You know, if it's €5, $5 a week, a day, I don't know. But I'm completely convinced that people will be willing to pay for a high-level, you know, AI assistant-based service.
But remember the episode with Rainer Brehm about how to make money out of Gen AI in the industrial sector?
Yeah, sure.
It's difficult.
Yeah, if I recall, he or they hadn't found it out yet. Now we have. Rainer can listen to us.
All right, you book a consulting with Peter.
Yeah.
Write him an email, peter@aipod.com.
Yeah. This was free of charge. The next 1 hour is going to be paying.
Okay, perfect. And now to the main part. Dr. Jens Ottnat is waiting. We are talking about AI training at Trumpf. We already talked about the initiative by Trumpf, and now I recorded an episode with Jens, and it's worth listening. Peter, it was a pleasure. Meet you in 15 minutes at Keba.
Exactly.
Talking about XLSDM and all the other stuff, edge devices, edge AI, blue collar AI. I'm really looking forward.
Me as well. And a nice hello to Jens as well, who was a part of our initial podcast, Industrial AI Conference. Good luck with your HR training activities on AI. And dear listener, looking forward to have you listen with us soon again. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. My guest today is Dr. Jens Ottnat from Trumpf. Jens, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, hello again.
Yes, hello again. Hello again. You're in a new role here. Please introduce yourself to the listeners.
Yeah, I've been working in the development team at Trumpf Machine Tools for more than a decade. And 1 year and 1 month ago, I switched, and now I'm responsible for vocational education at Trumpf. For those of you who are not familiar with that term, it's all about education, apprenticeship, and dual studying.
Today we're talking about training, education, and you and your team develop a special AI training. Why did you do that?
Probably it comes from my background, my experience when we started to build the first AI products for the machines. We found out that probably all of you know Andrew Ng, who was probably famous for many things, but the data-centric approach that he talked about was exactly what we had experienced. So in order to build any AI products, 90% or even more of the work has to be done in creating a good database, understanding what's happening in the real world, transferring to data, is absolutely crucial. And in order to achieve that, you not need only a few data scientists who know the business, but you need a lot of people who understand a certain amount of, let's say, data science in order to produce the right data. And that's the biggest transformation by far, I believe, that we have to do within the next years. And in order to do that, you have to start with the very young people. So in order to transform the company, start with the young talents. That's the idea. And that's the reason why we have to tell them how AI is working.
And how do you structure the training, and what are the main topics, and where do you focus them?
So we have different approaches. And the first thing that I saw was a research project, I think, driven by the University of Stuttgart, where it was about AI for apprenticeship. So they created some lessons, I think something like 70 hours training session with online and on-site classes. And that is a pilot. And we part of that pilot that was very promising. It's not about coding, but it's about understanding the basic ideas. I think the starting example was something like you want to sell ice cream the next weekend. Which flavors, how much do you need? How could you forecast that? Yeah, very, very basic ideas. And we got a very nice feedback from our young talents who joined that. And they already started to ask questions, yeah, in their certain departments. So that is one aspect. Another aspect is that we try to bring in our internal experts. We have something that is called TECH, our Trumpf Education Center. And we created something that we call TECH Insights. That means something like four lectures of experts from the machine tool.
But they have never timed, these experts, right?
They took their time.
Okay.
I motivated them.
Okay.
And they came, they gave four lectures, and they described, they gave really insights. They showed things that happen that are not so nice, yeah, things that you will never publish, that you cannot read in books, and give on different levels insights.
Oh, you can share with us now.
Yes, of course, because it was something like, especially about data quality.
Mm-hmm.
When we got the feedback afterwards, there was something like you could give some more of these shining examples, yeah. Because you always explain that data quality is crucial. Yeah. And we said, no, then everything was right, because that was so important that everyone learns that. And we're going to plan a pilot concerning how to use ChatGPT, how to understand about the basics behind only the prompt engineering, but taking both worlds together about prompt engineering, how to use it, what to expect. And we plan that for November.
Okay. So for me, AI also means trying something out. Yeah. As you mentioned, what role does trying out play in your concept?
To be honest, we have a challenge because in my team, there is no one who has hands-on experience in that field. That means we have to go in corporations with colleagues within the whole company. We try that by bringing in the experts and we try to create new formats where apprentices and the students can get some hands-on experience.
And who goes through the training? You mentioned apprentices and students. Is it these two groups, or is it also possible for all the employees to visit these courses or this training?
I think there are some elements that will be interesting, for example, that ChatGPT sessions, and we are the pilots. So we'll start with our, let's call them customers, and once we've established it there, we can roll it out to more employees.
So you are making the whole company ready for AI, right?
Is probably the biggest claim that one can find, but yes, I'll give my best.
Okay. Okay. But how do you develop the curriculum? Who supports you in the training? Also external experts, internal experts, what else?
I think from that research project that I mentioned, from that we could derive a quite good curriculum for the very basics. But by the way, we are already in discussions how to transfer it to internal workshops, but we also had discussions with a IPI in Heilbronn, for example, and we recently decided to start new courses for data science and AI at the DHBW, Duale Hochschule Baden-Württemberg in Karlsruhe. They are going to start the data science track next year. And we are hiring now.
What you are hiring? What kind of people?
Students who want to become a data science in the dual system. But so far, we were not so successful in finding people.
Why? Why is it so difficult?
Probably everyone knows Trump for its machines. Not everyone, but more people know Trump for the machines and the lasers. And not so many know Trump as an interesting field for software engineers. All flavors of software are typically a challenge. And as it is quite new, probably it takes some time, but we are looking forward to filling the places, hopefully, this year.
How and when does the training take place? Is it a part of the working hours? Is it special courses, or are there also exams or something like that? Can you please share a bit?
Typically, it is part of the normal working time. Also, there were some weekend courses.
For deep dives.
Yeah, for more motivation. And to be honest, we did not start with all of them, but with those who are really motivated and where we do not see that other problems will occur.
Okay. And how do you keep the training up to date? Because in the field of AI and data science, the world is changing every 2 weeks, maybe once in a week it's changing totally. How do you keep up to date?
I believe that for most, there is the typical 80-20 rule. Yeah, I believe that 80% need only 20% of the knowledge, and 20% need maybe 80% of the knowledge. For these basic levels, I think the changes are not so fast. On the other side, for the high-end applications, yes, there are a lot of changes, but the nature of that dual studies, that means that you get the knowledge from the experts in the special departments. So it's not something that we provide for everyone, but there are a lot of students going in the AI teams and helping and working there and get in touch with at least the latest technology that we use.
How many participants are there in the training now?
We had these, let's say, basic lectures with 60, 70 students. And we had that KI Zusatzqualifikation by the IHK.
Okay.
That were 8 in the pilot. Yeah.
Okay. But you mentioned they go to the different departments. Isn't there a jealousy with other R&D departments? Because now everybody talks about AI and everyone wants to join the department of AI and nobody wants to talk about lasers anymore. Is there no jealousy there?
To be honest, people who join Trump, they still like lasers. No doubt about that.
Okay.
So I think there are enough applications for everyone. And by the way, lasers and AI will also come together. I think that we will show something at the Europlech in Hannover this year where laser cutting and AI will come together.
Oh, we have to record again an episode on that. Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you convince the management? At different times in the moment, everybody wants to save a little bit of money. That costs money to invest in people, in AI. How did you convince the management?
I believe they are convinced by themselves because...
You're lucky.
The decision that I should do that job. Yeah, I did not join the discussions, but I've heard about the discussions where people thought, is it a good idea to place Jens at that position? Some said, I don't know, should he better stay in the R&D department? And our CEO, she said, okay, we need to provide someone with that knowledge for our young talents.
What have you learned so far in your new role when it comes to young people, new ideas, train them with AI? What have you learned?
There are different learnings. One learning was that young people are super open. They want to play around with the new technology. If it comes to the math behind it, it becomes challenging for some. If you're not really looking for software and that technology, then AI is probably even more challenging. But we have to distinguish between is someone who is in the R&D department working on the AI, building and his or her own application, or is it simply applying something, just to use something new? And the willingness to use something new is quite big. But we have to give them some application, some room where they can do the first steps and then go into the application.
You mentioned the mass deficits, I think. Is it now the task of the companies? Are we missing something at the university, at the schools? What is your opinion? Is it now your task to do that?
I think in some aspects, yes. But to be honest, we are still in a lucky position. as Trumpf. We get overall a lot of applications, and we can somehow pick the best talents. Smaller companies probably have much bigger challenges at that field. But we also have supporting activities in that field. Not super big, but from time to time.
But once again, the question, is there a deficit at the university and schools, and you have now to handle this deficit?
I think from school, yes. From universities, not so much. From the university point of view, it's more, are they fast enough in adapting to the new technology? If you have a discussion over 2 years, whether you should combine, let's say, the knowledge of mechanical engineering and data science, where there are discussions in Stuttgart at the DHBW, which I found very interesting, it takes a lot of time until they can make their decisions. Yeah.
So when you look a little bit into the future, is an AI training program as your program becoming the new standard in the industrial sector that all major companies need to do something like this?
Yes, I believe. I was reading something about, is the hype over for AI? And probably a year ago, people thought that a large language model will solve every problem. And surprisingly, it's not happening. On the other side, being open, adapting to that new technology for a lot of internal processes is important. But I'm convinced that the future of machine tools will be in the field of, let's say, data-driven, AI-supported aspects, like autonomous driving without AI. You will look at autonomous machine tools. You will not be able to solve that without AI. Very convinced.
Are you expanding the offer as an AI program to other employees, except the students and the younger people?
Just last week, we discussed what we are going to explain our students in that ChatGPT pilot. And it was absolutely clear that we want to roll it out. We do not know at the moment how in detail, but we plan that.
Because I think it's a huge transformation. Yes, you start now with the young people, but at the end, you also need to train the older people, right?
Yes, we have a, let's call it a cultural program, which we call Courage to Transform, which is not directly linked to any kind of technology, because we know that we have to transform our company all the time. And I found something very nice where one department explained me their use case, and I asked them to talk to someone from a different department, because it could be very helpful to have a clear database on the cloud and so on. And then they said, yeah, I already know it, because the students that had been in that department a few months ago came to me and I showed them my idea, and they said, there's something better that we already have in-house.
Okay.
And that is a kind of a networking and transformation power from our young talents that is hopefully much more powerful than if only the C-level gives some advices to them.
Exactly. And is the training program mandatory?
That is still in discussion. Probably in the final stage, yes. In the first steps, we will start with those who are willing and who are motivated. But to be honest, I do not know. It will work out finally. Yeah.
Because it's also a big benefit, right? You get a basic AI training program financed by your company. So it's a benefit to attract young people to work at Trumpf.
Yes, quite a good idea. So far, maybe the program is not so long established that would really work. At the moment, people are more asking, can I go abroad, yeah, and stay for a few months, maybe at the subsidiary?
Yeah, sure.
In Chicago, yeah.
But you have to promote it. The benefit is you get a basic AI training program by Trumpf. That's a big thing, I think.
Yeah, and the benefit is the combination with a real-world application.
Exactly, exactly. And that's a huge benefit for young people when you do an apprenticeship. That's a big thing, I think.
Yeah, good idea.
Mark my words.
Yeah.
So, Jens, what are your next steps? What are your next projects on your list? What do you have to do in the next months? Managing the crisis?
Yes, of course. But probably the most challenging will be to get enough busy colleagues who have the knowledge to convince them to spend time to train the young talents.
Oh, yeah. They have to write articles. Now they have also to teach the youngers. That's a huge topic, right? In the industrial sector, that time is always a resource nobody has.
Yeah. And in addition, we have created a new format, a learning format. We call it Innocation, a mixture of innovation and education, where 5 apprentices and students together, cross-functional team, and they worked on a real life, in that case, also data-driven project, and we are looking forward to planning something for the next year and maybe 1 or 2 sessions, and that could give maybe for 5-10 students real-world hands-on experience in AI.
And you always invite, I think, AI gurus like Sepp Hochreiter or somebody else. And I think that's a good idea then to invite them and to discuss with the gurus what is on the next step on AI. I think that's a great idea also to invite these guys and to get in touch with the next generation of AI. So I was really impressed when I saw the pictures when you had this discussion with Sepp there. I really liked that. Yeah.
Probably that was, I didn't mention that, but that was, of course, a great experience. He was our internal fair intake in spring, and that was, I think, a few days before he published his
XLSTM.
Yeah, and he was already talking about it, without really showing something. And those who were not so familiar with the technologies, they said only he doesn't like ChatGPT. That's what everyone learned. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good to get this together, the gurus and the young people exchanging ideas. I think that's a very, very nice format. Yeah.
Yeah, that was really cool. Yeah.
And do you plan to invite external guests also to hold lectures or courses or something like that?
Yeah, we have throughout the whole year a series of talks that we call AI Insights with external guests, and they're open for everyone. But also students were invited the last time. And that takes place in our tech in the Trumpf Education Center. So they get in touch.
Jens, it's a great initiative. It's a great program. Thanks a lot for sharing your ideas with our listeners. All the best for you and your whole team and your young people focusing on AI, learning AI, data science, data-centric approach. Congratulations and all the best for you and your team.
Thank you.